And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauk.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time, and every other time in between. Each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. Well, I am Dr. James Hauk, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you'd like to be part of the show, I invite you to call in. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And these broadcasts are also podcasted now, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And I just wanted to say at the top of this hour, just wanted to thank you for your support. And would like to say that you now have an opportunity to continue your support in different ways by becoming a monthly subscriber. Now, unlike other radio spots, subscription is not required to listen to my talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So you can just go right on to the website, and you'll see the information there about talk show subscriptions, and choose any amount you feel comfortable giving. And again, I thank you for that very, very much. Well, for those of you new to the program, and I'm sure there's people tuning in each and every week who are new, I'd like to say that just a little bit of a background about myself, that I'm a firm believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for this life in terms of our giftedness, or in terms of our skills, or our talents and strengths, our character traits and so forth, personality. However, as we go along in life, and perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness. Or we may push that giftedness or our skills way down so that others cannot see it. You know, because perhaps we were told we would never amount to anything growing up, or perhaps when we had expressed our talents or our giftedness, those talents were exploited for some reason, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. At any rate, we do not realize our giftedness, and we often go through life functioning from a place of woundedness instead of a place of healing and wholeness and uniqueness, or hachaitos. And yet there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is what Reclaiming Authenticity is all about: having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Or, as Anthony DeMello puts it, the spiritual quest is a journey without distance. You travel from where you are right now to where you have always been, from ignorance to recognition, for all you do is see for the first time what you have always been looking at. Who ever heard of a path that brings you to yourself, or a method that makes you what you have always been? Spirituality, after all, is only a matter of becoming what you really are. And I would also add on to that, who you really are. And that comes from the book, The Heart of the Enlightened by Anthony DeMello. Well, how is your heart today? I hope your heart is well. I hope you are well. And I pray that if you are struggling today, that you would find the rest and the comfort and the peace that you need. Well, welcome to today's show. I'm going to be talking about the alchemy of authenticity, and this particular show is going to be focusing on transforming dimensions of silence. Yes, transforming dimensions of silence. And just again to enlighten the people who are tuning in for the first time, the alchemy of authenticity. In school, we may have learned in chemistry class that physical alchemy was and is concerned about altering and transforming chemical properties within solid matter, such as changing lead to gold. But spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing our vast spiritual selves, which oftentimes are hindered within us by the unrefined parts of ourselves. In other words, our fears take over, or our limited personal beliefs, or we might struggle with self-loathing or something else. But it prevents us from not only discovering who we fully are, but also realizing that there is so much, much more to us. So spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted. It's fluid. It's ongoing. It's this continuation of the purification of our hearts, much in the same way a smith will turn up the heat beneath a hopper that contains a raw mineral or metal. As the heat is increased, the dross or the impurities come to the surface only to be skimmed off, making the metal purer than what it was before. And then this process is repeated over and over again and again until the metal reaches its finest purity that it can be. Well, we too are going through a process of a spiritual alchemy of authenticity. You know, that is a call and an urging to move into higher dimensions of our authentic selves. Because let's be honest here for a second, how often does it feel like the heat is being turned up through past and current events throughout the world? You know, and therefore, when going through this process of a spiritual awakening, sooner or later, we are confronted with the fact that there seems to be so much more to ourselves than the reality that we are living in and that which we've grown accustomed to. But still, we may find ourselves struggling with how we are triggered again and again by certain events in the world, and yet, at the same time, having a more intentional progression in our spirituality and finding that courage deep within ourselves to let go of those non-life-giving perceptions and experiences. We let go of those things in order to embrace more of our higher dimension, more of our authentic selves, and a desire to live exclusively from a heart space of pure light and unconditional love. So let's talk about this subject that most people are uncomfortable with, and that is silence. It's kind of ironic, you know, because depending on the kind of day you're having, or, you know, many people can't wait to get home and decompress. They can't wait to get home and they can just relax, kick their shoes off, put their feet up, just relax and enjoy some peace and quiet. And we've all been there. We've all had days where we just don't want to think anymore. We just don't want to feel anymore. I just need silence. And although we're craving some peace and quiet, it's not exactly the same thing as being in silence. And this is what I mean by that. You would think that quiet and silence are the same thing, but not quite. Because whenever we think about quiet or, you know, quietude, we may tend to think that it is just simply the absence of noise or the absence of sound, or at least stifling that noise that's around us. I mean, we even have noise-canceling earphones and earbuds or soundproof rooms and so forth. But these are helpful in eliminating background sound, which allows us, if you work from home, you can be on conference calls and so forth without any distractions, or to listen to music more fully without interference. And if you don't have a pair of these earphones, I have to highly recommend that you just add that to your list of things to get. So that's quiet. But silence, on the other hand, is different. You know, if we want to put it into the context of a spiritual or meditative sense, silence is intentionally entering into a state of inner peace and tranquility. It's more than just quieting our minds by dismissing all of those checklists of things that we have to do. And entering into silence is more intentional because we seek to communicate with God on a soul level, a dimension where words are not necessary, let alone able to follow. You've heard me say this before, but one of my favorite stories about Mother Teresa was when she was asked, what does she say to God whenever she prays? And she replied, well, I don't say anything. Okay, what do you do? Well, I listen. All right, well then, what does God say to you? And she replied, he doesn't say anything to me. He also listens. And truly, that's entering into silence on that soul level. That is that soul-to-soul expression, that soul-to-soul communication. And this is when we discover that our human language is actually a hindrance to listening to the very cry of our soul. Because you see, we can be in prayer, okay? But if our minds are racing a mile a minute, we're not in silence. Okay? And this is often the place where many people long to be, and they struggle to achieve that. They struggle to get there. Okay? Now, I'll be the first one to admit that, you know, when we often interchange words like quiet and silence, you know, in and throughout society. And I did a little checking earlier this week because I've often heard it said that there is sound in silence. Maybe because I'm nostalgic and I remember the Simon and Garfunkel song, The Sound of Silence. But in all actuality, does silence have a sound? Well, it all depends on who you ask. You know, there are many interpretations out there for sound, or a sort of sound and silence, I should say. And according to Dr. Seth Horowitz of Brown University, he says in truly quiet areas, you can even hear the sound of air molecules vibrating inside your ear canals or the fluid in your ears themselves. Okay, and if you've ever been to the beach, you know that if you hold a seashell up to your ear and you get that sound of, you know, it sounds like the ocean roaring or the waves crashing, that's what he's pointing to. It's these molecules that are just reverberating through our ears and bouncing off our eardrums, or, you know, the air molecules vibrating inside our ear canals, or even if we have fluid in the ears themselves. But it's often fun to find that one large cell and or shell and hold it up to our ears and just listen as if we are right there with the ocean. And this is something that I often share with kids that I counsel this time of the year who love to go to the beach. And they come back, and of course, they have to share with me all the shells that they found on the beach and what else they did and so forth. And sooner or later, we usually end up talking about, so what was it like to be at the beach? And they often tell me it was very relaxing. They had a great time. They went in the water. They got sunburn or whatever else, or they ate out, had eat way too much pizza, whatever it is. But now that they're back home, they miss it. And there's a little bit of depression going on because, well, in about another 6 weeks or so, 5 weeks, school will be back in session. And so summer is just flying by here. But if they happen to have a large shell, I tell them to, you know, hurry up and go get it. And, you know, they, I said, you know, just hold it up to your ear. And, you know, of course, they say, you know, it sounds like I'm listening to the waves crashing all over again as if I'm at the beach. And I just say, that's right. It does sound like that. So the next time you miss the beach, hold that shell up to your ears and listen to the sound that you really enjoy. Well, other people who consider silence and quiet might interpret silence as that moment when something is left unsaid, because words themselves are so unnecessary. You know, just you hit that realization in a conversation where it's like, I don't have anything else to say. And so we pause. I mean, it could even cause a gap in a conversation when silence itself replaces the words. And I'm sure you've been in gatherings or, you know, in a meeting or something where there's just a lot of talking going on, or even at a party, a lot of talking going on. And then there's this pause where everybody seems to stop talking all at once. And interestingly enough, you'll just check this out for yourselves, but that occurs about every 7 minutes, where it's just everything is said, and then all of a sudden, there's a pause. Okay, it's just an interesting phenomena. So every 7 minutes, so go ahead and check that out for yourself, and let me know your thoughts about that. It's just quite interesting. But, you know, silence can also be an indicator of very powerful empathy. And when we are really tuning into how another person is feeling about what they're saying, we're listening more to, let's say, the tone of their voice and the speed of their words than the actual words. As in, there's an awareness of the pain and suffering in others that's so deep that words cannot simply express it adequately. So in one sense, you can say that silence has sound, but more accurately, silence has vibration. It's a vibration that can not only be heard by our ears and then interpreted in our minds, but it's also felt deep within. And it's this characteristic of silence that requires no words. In fact, if we force words, it'll just spoil the entire experience. But just as we have this capacity for language, we also have this same capacity for vibration. And this is why we need to realize that when we choose the words we say, they too carry with them not only the sound, but also the energy. You know, with our words and our energy, we have the power to heal or the power to wound. We have the power to lift somebody's day, or we have the power to hopefully, you know, unbeknownst to them, hopefully we don't crush them either. Well, a nice, fun summer movie to watch is Mr. Holland's Opus. And if you've ever seen it, you know where I'm going with this. It's, you know, if you recall that Mr. Holland, he was a music teacher, just loved music in general. He loved the blues. And, you know, he had a son who was born without his sense of hearing. And he struggled with this all the time. And he could never get around the irony of a music teacher having a son who was hearing impaired. But as his son grew up, he loved to work on older cars. He was just a very gifted mechanic. And he found and used the mechanic's stethoscope to listen to the engine's vibration. And he would be able to feel if the engine was running smoothly or if something in the engine was misfiring or whatever the problem was. He was very gifted at doing this. And the underlying, very subtle message in the movie was that human beings can be attuned to higher and higher vibrations that connect us with higher parts of ourselves. And when Mr. Holland understood how his son connected through the power of vibration, he put on a high school concert in which the sounds of his orchestra, his band, were hooked up to bright lights so that every note, every drum beat, even the clash of the cymbals, resonated with exploding flashes of colorful lights. I mean, it was truly astonishing to watch. It was a powerful point in the movie, and it just was very much breakthrough when it came to understanding just the power of vibration, the power of sound, the power of silence. And we can feel sound. We can feel silence because after a sound is produced, that vibration continues. We can even listen to our own heartbeats through a stethoscope, but more importantly, we can also feel the vibration of our hearts. And whenever we experience in our relationships forgiveness and are able to then release negative energy and pain that we've been hanging on to, those aspects of ourselves that no longer serve us, we tune into those higher frequencies or vibrations, as it were. I mean, think of it also in terms of, like, say, a piano tuner using a tuning fork by striking the prongs and thereby releasing a perfect pitch wave pattern, and then adjusting the sound of an instrument so that the two vibrations are in sync. And some piano tuners, musicians are extremely gifted in this area where all they have to do is just listen carefully and they have this perfect pitch where they can just tune an instrument and it matches the vibration that they're able to hear in their minds. So going back to the spiritual components of silence, even scripture reminds us of the importance of entering into silence, every day, either through a prayer or meditation, so that we can benefit from that vibration or that attunement. And vibration indeed takes us into another level of awareness. In fact, this is what the gurus and the swamis and the yogis taught, that in order to find God, you must first know how to enter into silence. And this is something that I just saw such a stark contrast when I was in India, that people from the West had a hard time just entering into silence because we think silence is the absence of something. It's the absence of sound. It's the absence of God's voice. It's the absence of whatever it is that we were expecting. But on the other hand, India teaches us and those who are comfortable with silence that silence, we can discover many things. We can actually hear exactly what we need to understand and to be open and to be allowed to be transformed by that silence. But also, many ancient and contemporary practitioners of meditation these days often use chanting of sacred sounds to help them be in sync with higher vibrations, such as chanting, the sacred sound of Om. And back in the 90s, I remember how science was, attempting to get on board with all of this, that when people chant Om, this vibration of sound is felt through one's vocal cords. And when people feel that, it clears and opens up sinuses. And they also discover that chanting Om has cardiovascular benefits. It reduces stress and anxiety. It relaxes your body and brings down the blood pressure to a normal level. And it just sets the heartbeat into more of a regular rhythm. So the more we are in tuned with silence, the more we are in tune with, say, sacred sounds and the presence of God, the more we experience what Sardello calls this empathic resonance. It's the resonance of our soul coming into the resonance with the soul of God. And I love the way he puts that, because he says that what we discover in being more fully connected to the soul of God then is that we are also more connected to the things that bring us great joy, as well as also being connected to things that are disturbing and cause great suffering. But still, we embrace all to be an extension of God's grace and God's presence and healing for people who are looking and listening for God's presence and grace and healing in their lives. In other words, we embrace all things in order to create a space for transformation to occur in all people. And as transforming people, you know, just want to say a quick word of caution here that we simply cannot act like we can pick and choose, you know, when and where and why and even how God will use us. You know, we say, God, you know, use me to do this and such, or allow me to do this and such. And then when God starts working behind the scenes, shall we say, and we're like, wait a minute, I didn't really ask for that. Let me be more specific. We can't exactly dictate to God down to the very last T to be crossed and the I to be dotted. We have to allow room for God to work. You know, it reminds me of that movie, was it Under the Tuscan Sun, where I think it was Diane Lane's character, she simply started to dictate to God at the beginning of the movie how she wanted her life to turn out, where she wanted to live. You know, she wanted to own her own home. She wanted it to be filled with children, her own children, to be filled with family and music and so forth. But as the movie went on, one by one, her so-called expectations started to evaporate. They started to disappear. She found out that she could not bear children. She started to feel disconnected from her family. And just, again, like one thing after another just started to disappear from her life. And she thought, you know, what am I doing wrong here? Am I in the right place? Is this the right time? And so forth. But as, again, the movie went on and toward the end of the movie, she received everything that she asked for. In fact, her home was filled with children, and she had family members or people she considered family living with her who had children, and there was great music and joy and dancing, and there was just a lot of love in her home. And she just realized that there's more than one way God can answer our prayers. Okay, but still, as transformed people and being transformed ourselves, we just simply cannot, you know, dictate or pick and choose where, when, why, and how God will use us. But instead, since we expect that God is more than able to understand and embrace all aspects of our lives, then should we not be willing to be, you know, and be the same for ourselves and others? So in other words, let's say if we want to be used by God as healers, it shouldn't come as a surprise that we're going to be placed in circumstances where we're going to run into pain and sorrow and suffering. Or if we want God to grant us that ancient wisdom, it should come as no surprise that we're going to be placed in situations where people are, let's say, impulsive or lack insight. Okay? And if we want God to use us as peacemakers, then also it should be no surprise that we will be placed in times of war, chaos, and death. In fact, to work for peace, we might have to expose ourselves to very non-peaceful situations. And so the same is true that if we want to become more and more authentic, then we find ourselves at times being exposed to, let's say, more inauthentic people and situations. But ultimately, the question for us then is, when we listen for God, what do we hear? Do we do all the talking? Or do we listen? And is God listening? And are we entering into those moments from a soul-to-soul relationship with God? And contemplation, meditation, helps us reclaim our authentic selves as the silence awakens the deepest desires of our soul. And before I fully understood the value of contemplation, I, you know, was probably like the majority of people and just viewed silence as not only the absence of noise, but also the absence of God. And to be quite honest, I knew that silence was there. I knew it was there, but I didn't know how to enter it. Right? I didn't know how to listen for God in the silence. And my mind, my ego just simply couldn't comprehend how God can communicate when I hear nothing. In fact, in some ways, I was like, you know, David in Psalm 130. Out of the depths, I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the cry for mercy. If you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness so that we can, with reverence, serve you. And although most people are uncomfortable with silence or convince themselves that God might be uninterested in their circumstances, silence is actually where we connect with that living presence of God. And we do not enter into silence just for the sake of ridding ourselves of whatever sounds of the day we want to escape. And, you know, truth be told, many people would see this as a welcomed relief. But on the contrary, we purposefully enter into the silence with God in order to experience this empathetic residence more clearly. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on this subject of sound and vibration and silence. So if you would like to call in, I invite you to do so. That number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just like to say, you know, I'm here every Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, and every time in between. And next week's show, I'm going to be continuing with the theme of the alchemy of authenticity and come up with another way of looking at how do we transform into higher dimensions, and perhaps even take a look at how does this exactly show up in us physically, you know, because we are connected, you know, body, mind, spirit, and our emotions and so forth. And whenever a transformation occurs in our lives, be it all, you know, small or even the slightest transformation, it's going to show up in other areas of our lives, kind of like a ripple effect. So, and just invite you to tune in next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I just want to take this opportunity just again to thank you for your support over the past year. And just like to say, you know, remind you that you have an opportunity to do more of this, to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber. And all in all, you do not need a monthly subscription to listen to my talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So again, I just invite you to go on the website and you'll see a subscription link there and choose any amount that you feel comfortable giving. And I truly thank you from the bottom of my heart. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about how we crave quiet, you know, but we can be uncomfortable with silence. You know, it's just kind of ironic. We think, you know, if we get one, we have the other, but it's not exactly the case. But in a sense, we must not only be comfortable with silence, but we also have to be comfortable in silence. And silence does carry sound, and with that sound, there is a vibration, you know, and there's more to silence than just, let's say, waiting to talk or waiting our turn before we say something. And in counseling therapy, in my experience, is that when a client is silent, it's often first understood as displaying some form of, let's say, inner resistance, of like not wanting to talk as an act of defiance. But this isn't always the case, you know, but because if there's one lesson I've learned over the years, it's that suffering and silence often go hand in hand. And this is another way to understand that vibration of silence, especially when a person or a group of people are forced into silence and believe that they have no voice. But how do we reach beyond what people are sharing with us, and we reach beyond, you know, the stories that they share, we reach beyond that into the silences that perhaps they hide? And we can do this by listening for not only what is not being said, but also things that they cannot say, you know, and then just being comfortable with silence, we can hold the space for another person's story to emerge. And this is something you cannot rush. People, I mean, we in general, humanity are just born storytellers. That's something we love to do. And that's, you know, the ancient of times, you know, this was how information was just handed down before we put it into press and, you know, pen and paper and so forth. You know, people were very gifted. And I believe it's the ancient griots in Africa who, I mean, this was their job in life. They had one thing to do and they took it very seriously, but they were kind of the walking encyclopedias of knowledge and history for their people. And they were trained at a very early age just to be able to not just spit back, you know, dates and times and, you know, stories and so forth, but they remembered the context in which their ancestors had lived, and they remember the context of which lessons were taught and so forth. And a lot of times, you know, we find healing in our own lives through the power of stories. But again, how you tell your story is just as important as when you tell your story or to whom you tell your story. Because even though we choose specific words to communicate what we want others to hear, we also choose what not to say. Okay, so listen for what is being said. Listen for what is not being said, and then take it one step deeper and listen perhaps to what people cannot speak to, what they have yet to form, what they have yet to discover, or what they might be comfortable with. But, you know, because even giving a voice to suffering is liberating. There is healing in that. And this is why AA meetings are so powerful, or NA meetings, and, you know, because of that group camaraderie, when one person stands up and says, "Hello, my name is, and I'm an alcoholic." And there's acceptance in that. And for somebody to hear themselves say those words for the first time, it's very freeing. It's almost as if it takes a burden off of their hearts and shoulders. And the more they tell their stories, the more they're used to hearing themselves. And transformation can occur just the way that we tell stories. But let's take this truth a little bit deeper. You know, let's contemplate, shall we, the silence of water. That's right. Silence of water. If you've ever noticed, you know, water can almost be called the epitome of silence, because water only makes a sound when it's moving against another surface, or such as when, you know, like water is being poured into a glass, or whenever we swallow it, or water is running over rocks or crashing against the shore when the waves create wind, you know, the wind creates the waves. And yet, when it is still, this inaudible silence of water communicates how it's filled with life, and that gives life to all who depend upon it. It is very, very powerful element indeed, and has much to teach us. Well, you know, for those of you who have been listening to the program for some time now, you know that I'm a movie buff and I love my movies. That's where we often get great life lessons, and I'm a big believer in movie therapy for clients and so forth. But another great movie that communicates just the power of water is a movie that came out in 2013. It's entitled The Cherokee Word for Water, which it followed the work that led Wilma Mankiller to become the first contemporary female chief of the Cherokee Nation. And I highly recommend it, The Cherokee Word for Water. But here's also another great exercise. You know, the next time you drink water, okay, either from a glass or a plastic bottle or something, just stop and meditate on its characteristics of light and sound that it makes. It holds the light. It holds sound. Contemplate how the molecular structure of water. Okay, let's go back to chemistry class here. H2O, it gives life to our human breath, O2, and CO2. As we breathe in, we breathe out. But that molecular structure of water, H2O, gives life to oxygen and also cleanses the body from carbon dioxide. And, you know, and let's consider how, you know, as it says in the book of Genesis, where God breathed life into humanity, and where we feel, you know, the breath, matter, and movement of God in our lives. So to take this understanding, you know, again, one step further, as we swallow water, let's enter into the silence of gratitude for its life-giving properties. You know, water is one of those elements that we can easily take for granted. You know, we just simply can. I mean, let's just be simply honest with ourselves. But let us also deeply connect with how the essence of water helps us discover our inner voice, so that we could be a voice for those who have no water, let alone who are unable to speak. And this was a phenomena that, again, author Yuvashi Buttalia understood all too well. She did some research and eventually wrote a book, The Other Side of Silence, which she had wrote about how 50 years later, the people of India and Pakistan still grieved the partition of 1947. And she also noticed that when she interviewed people about how life changed for them when that partition was declared, men and women not only told their stories differently, but she also noticed how the women had more, shall we say, the periods of silence in their stories. And at one point in her book, she writes that, you know, if that she just noticed that she started to talk to the women, but if their husbands or sons were around, the husbands and sons would take over the interview and kind of making the women lapse into a sort of a silence, just kind of fading into the background. And she noted that this was not uncommon, because many oral histories have written about the difficulty of speaking to and speaking with women, of learning to listen differently, often listening to, say, the hidden nuances, or what she would say is the half-said thing. And she would just came away from those interviews just marveling that it was the silence which was sometimes more eloquent than the speech or the words themselves. And one of the aspects I'm discovering is that attuning to higher dimensions of spirituality and who we are, awakening to who we are, and being getting used to that and walking in it every day and so forth, that we indeed hear God and the universe more clearly. And yet, again, here's some more irony. Living daily in higher dimensions also awakens us to higher levels of silence. And ultimately, as we become aware, we also accept and allow ourselves to be carried by the grace of God in those silences. Well, I'm sure that you all have heard, or perhaps you've even read, the poem Footprints in the Sand. It's a poem where the authorship is disputed, depending on who you talk to. A lot of people claim that they wrote it first, but it is a poem nonetheless, based on Christian beliefs, and describes a person's dream one night in which he or she was walking on a beach with God. And as they are walking along, which is analogous of a person's various experiences and throughout life, they leave two sets of footprints in the sand. And suddenly the two sets of footprints become one, especially at the lowest and most hopeless moments of that person's life, or what they consider to be hopeless. And when the person looks back and they only see one set of footprints, you know, they start to question God, believing that, why did you leave me? You know, I only see one set of footprints at the lowest times of my life. Where did you go? And, you know, God gives the explanation, you know, during your times of trials and suffering and pain, when you only see one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. And perhaps if we could enter into that higher dimension of silence, we just might also awaken to the lesson that silence doesn't automatically mean the absence of God. But perhaps, you know, silence is calling us to really resonate with the calling to become an answer to prayer for others. And how many times are we called into, it's time for me to carry you. It's time for you to allow me to help you. And who knows, we just never know when we could be an answer to somebody's prayer. And as we go through life, and depending on our experiences in our lives, we start to question what used to be true for us, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I had a conversation with somebody earlier this week in which they, you know, is it okay to question God? Is it okay to, you know, raise such questions and to get frustrated at God? And it's like, well, let's look at the context. And, you know, as obviously a person had these expectations of how, you know, she thought God, you know, would act and answer prayer and so forth like that. And she was just growing more and more, you know, irritated and frustrated and so forth. And I said, you know, really, I don't think there's any question or any amount of our frustration in which we can either stump God or exhaust the patience of God or something like that, because I tend to think that God sees the bigger picture. And I am truly grateful for this. you know, God sees, you know, beginning, middle, and the end, and way more than what you and I see. And God's patience with us is enough to be thankful for just with that. Because if God didn't have patience, we're all in trouble. Okay, I'll just say that out loud. We're so grateful for that, you know, because God puts our lives into a context. You know, we don't see as much as God sees, and so forth. And so, you know, perhaps ever since childhood, we have a certain way in which we see ourselves, or how we see others, or how we view God, or how we see the world at large. And whenever we go through an experience that sooner or later is going to shake up or shatter those assumptions, you know, that innocence in our lives, we feel as though nothing makes sense anymore. We don't have a sense of, or seem to have a sense of our bearings, let alone knowing which way is up at times. And this can be a very unnerving state or place to find ourselves in, especially when we feel like all of what we know and have known is starting to crumble, and it's starting to evaporate. And we can become so unsure of not only ourselves, but also whether or not if all that we see is all that there is. And yet, you know, we can weather these storms. And we can also discover through those times of silences that there's something greater than ourselves, which is tugging at our soul. Call it that stronger nudge from God, or a more intense dimensional energy, or even a hunger that resonates deep within by compelling us to go and search to discover the vastness of who we truly are. And as we go on this journey, we're going to discover that there are things that we need to identify, let go of, and transform in order to embrace, you know, higher, more intense dimensions. In other words, you know, rising above all the negative mental, emotional, physical, even spiritual triggers that keep us from experiencing the fullness of unconditional love. And this phenomena is at the heart of a multidimensional understanding of spirituality. Well, in the Oglala Lakota tradition, Frank Fool's Crow, he lived, born late 1800s and died, I believe, like just before 1990. I want to say 1988, 1989. He taught that in order to become holy, that is, one through whom the Great Spirit could work in and through to heal others, a person must first become like a hollow bone. And Frank Fool's Crow believed that people are not to seek transformation for their own power and honor, but instead to be transformed into this hollow bone or this pipeline that connects God and the people. And this process of becoming a hollow bone actually begins when people ask God to, okay, get rid of everything in myself, anything that would impede any way, any doubt, questions, selfishness, or reluctance on my part. And as a result, the psycho-spiritually transformed people would then need to see themselves as unobstructed conduits through whom God could work to bless others. In other words, we become transformed in order that the people might live. So this hollow bone is a powerful symbol for emptying ourselves of everything that hinders and impedes the life of God's Spirit in our lives. And again, let's go back to biology class. You know, when we think about bones, you know, bones do provide our bodies with not only a physical frame, but also within themselves contain marrow, this flexible tissue that is responsible for producing blood and supporting our immune system. But In understanding this concept of becoming a hollow bone, we must first acknowledge our need to, metaphorically speaking, dying to ourselves. And ironically, a hollow bone is both dead, in that it doesn't contain any blood or marrow, and yet at the same time, it is alive, because it is the Spirit of God flowing freely in and through us for the benefit of others. And this act is not a one-time event, but rather it's an ongoing process of examining and letting go of ourselves in order to take hold something better for the sake of humanity. God is speaking to us all the time. I'm not the first one to came up with that. I rely on that, and I am so gracious that God does. But the question I keep asking myself is, what's keeping me from hearing God's voice? And through contemplation, we not only need to stop, you know, our mind's chatter, but also open our hearts regarding how we see and listen for God, especially in the silence. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this time with me. I really enjoy it. Leave me your comments on the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And I'll be with you again next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. But until then, may everybody be safe, and by all means, behave yourselves. Okay? You take care, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.